welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, it is a live episode from Downtown Cinemas in Las Vegas. We are talking about Imaginary, the new creepy doll, creepy kid, creepy house horror movie from Blumhouse. And joining me for this live conversation over there at Downtown Cinemas, I had Tom Devlin, Nick Woods, and Jimmy Gonzalez. We had a great time talking about this one, and that is coming up here in a second. Before we get to it, I do want to remind you, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever it is that you listen to podcasts, because we have a lot of episodes on the way, and you want to find out about those as soon as they come up. Also, you can follow us on social media at PiecingPod, and don't forget to join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. With that said, let's get to this very fun conversation about Imaginary. All right, well, we are going to talk about Imaginary, and I am David Rosen, the host of Piecing It Together podcast, a podcast where we take a look at a movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it, and that's what we're going to do tonight. So, first of all, thank you to Downtown Cinemas for having us here. It was fun getting to watch the movie with everybody here, but let's get to our panel, and then we'll get into the movie, but starting off with Jimmy Gonzalez right here. Jimmy, introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Jimmy Gonzalez. I'm a DJ, a filmmaker, a dad, and cinephile all around. But yeah, thanks for having me back. It's been it's always a good time.
Absolutely, absolutely. Nick Woods to the right of you right there. Nick, first time on the show. Introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me. My name's Nick Woods. I'm a filmmaker and the founder of Sin City Horror Club here in Las Vegas.
Right on, right on. And then we got Tom Devlin over there, second time on the show. Happy to have him back. Tom, thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me back. And my name's Tom Devlin. I'm a filmmaker, and I own Tom Devlin's Monster Museum out in Boulder City.
Right on, right on. So I always like to just kick these things off. We'll get into all kinds of thoughts about the movie along the way, but I always like to just throw a puzzle piece out there right away. That's what we call it. We call them puzzle pieces, which are the movies that we think might have inspired the movie we just watched, Imaginary. And I want to kick this one off with Coraline, which I actually just rewatched yesterday, and it's so much fun. But as far as like distracted parents moving their kid to a new house and just completely ignoring them and letting them explore on their own, and then they find a doll, and the doll promises them this amazing world to go and explore and go be a part of. But of course, there's ulterior motives involved. It feels like Coraline is like number one here. What do you guys, did that come to mind for any of you?
The button eyes, definitely.
Sure.
The button eyes thing. I was like, yeah, it's like when we first saw it in the picture, I fucking laughed. I was like, well, that felt like a cheesy add-on.
Yeah.
And then I realized it was something they were going to play out.
Yeah.
So. I think we said from our seats, we're like, man, this is just Coraline. And then the button eyes showed up immediately. And I was like, there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so much fun. What about you, Jimmy?
Honestly, I never saw Coraline.
Never seen it? It's so good.
No, I just never got around to that one.
Yeah, it's a great movie. Definitely recommend checking it out, especially, you know, for anyone who loves stop motion. Yeah. But with that said, I do want to kind of throw over to you first, Tom, because when I first asked you to be on this episode, I hadn't yet seen your film, Teddy Told Me To.
So now you've seen the finale.
Yeah.
And you see the art design that was totally in this movie.
Well, it's funny because, like, I was thinking when I invited you on, I was like, you know, Teddy Told Me To is going to be, like, a puzzle piece here. I mean, it's, you know, based on just, like, the whole concept. But honestly, I almost feel like Tom Devlin's Monster Museum is more a puzzle piece. Like, you know, this whole movie turns into a whole haunt situation.
It felt like a haunted house in the end, yeah. But the specific like bedroom layer with the spinning bear lights,
yeah,
and the hand kid drawn walls, like my movie Teddy Told Me To is a slasher film and it's not much like this at all.
Right. Yeah.
Perhaps the backstory that's not told was similar, but it's not like this. But there's one room setup that I mean, it was undeniably like, God, that's the same. Who else thought about spinning bear lights and hand-drawn, Teddy told me to do this, you know, you know, there's stuff on my walls that you don't see because the movie's moving so fast, but it says, like, kill your brother and little things. And actually, my children painted those walls when they were
nice.
five and eight.
Like, gotta get them started young. Yeah,
It's all, like, weird handprints, and it looked just like that bedroom. yeah. like identical. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, Blumhouse, you're watching. You've been watching Tubi, haven't you, Blumhouse?
That was the standout was the set design in there. Actually, yeah. I really loved it. I thought I loved like the checker floors and stuff. And a lot of it looked like
Labyrinth because of the M.C. Escher stuff.
Sure.
And also Leviathan from Hellraiser, Hellbound.
Yes, I thought of Hellraiser
because the hallways that are all like. They're all like on like spokes on a wheel almost. Mm-hmm. Like they're all so adjacent.
Yeah.
That's totally out of Hellraiser.
Yeah. Hellraiser was going to be one of mine too. Let's just make that your first puzzle piece there, Nick, because I think it's a great one. And especially with, these demons wanting them to bring them stuff to, promise them whatever. But Hellraiser is a great
one. And the rooms are all different types of like deceptions and stuff.
Yeah.
And Hellraiser 2, that's like the whole. Third act of the movie.
So. Absolutely. Right on. Well, Jimmy, let's go to your first piece. What do you got?
Well, for me, the obvious was just Child's Play. I mean, just to have the whole element with the imaginary friend and stuff. And I'm glad it didn't kind of go down that same route because I was like, don't tell me they're going to do that. So it was a really good, a little bit of a twist in there. I don't want to give it away here for someone who hasn't seen it yet. But
can we give stuff away in this?
Let's just spoil the fuck out of it. It's okay. We put the spoiler warning at the.
It's like I'm glad it just didn't turn out to be the same old. Like I really like how they turned it on to the mother who's she was seeing things as well. So, just Child's Play is the first thing that came to mind until a story took a little turn.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, anytime you're talking, and I mean, maybe other killer dolls will come up in this conversation, but anytime a killer doll comes up, you kind of got to go to Child's Play. And I think it's a definite inspiration on everything because we're getting a lot of killer dolls over the last 10 years.
And especially Blumhouse. I'm actually kind of surprised that they even took the route again of another doll, child themed film, like with the Megan and all that kind of stuff. But, I guess it seems to work for them.
It makes money. That's why. So, I mean, we're obviously recording this opening night. Who knows if this is going to make money, but they generally do. So, but Tom, let's go to another piece over there.
I mean, the opening scene, and maybe it's a red herring, but kind of sets up the pace for the movie is Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
They moved on to Elm Street and when they were moving into the new house.
It was Springwood, right? It said Springwood, Louisiana,
on the license
on the thing.
You're right.
Then starts with the dream sequence, just like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
My buddy pointed out when there's actual claw marks in the house, shit's really happening for real, similar to Nightmare on Elm Street. And her name's Alice. That's the Dream Warrior, Dream Master.
Right.
Damn, that's a lot of Nightmare on
Elm Street. Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, it's produced by Ryan Turek. The artist formerly known as Ryan Rotten, who's a huge Elm Street fan. I would imagine that stuff was not on accident.
And even
the house. The house looked like the Elm Street house. We were waiting at the end for the mom to get whisked out the window. It's got the green overhang roof. And
cinematography and the camera work was definitely Nightmare 3, especially, I thought.
Yeah.
With Alice,
I mean, we do get the Blumhouse, like everything is super dark. But otherwise, when the scenes are visible, you can see some of that for sure, But yeah, I love Nightmare on Elm Street as a piece here. That's perfect pull. I will go to I'm going to talk about that twist. We do put the spoiler alert at the top of the show. But when it is revealed that nobody else sees the doll, I mean, that was like a Kaiser Sose moment here. I'm going Usual Suspects, just getting away from horror for a second. It was inspired. Let's just say that. Like that could not work at all. But I thought it actually really worked well. And I think, I thought it was a great twist.
Yeah. And in the middle of the movie, too.
Yeah.
You don't typically get a twist like that in the middle of the film. That's usually something you wait for, like, the back end of the second act.
Exactly.
Yeah, it kind of snapped me back.
Explained why the bear could move under the bed sheets without,
totally explained that. Yeah.
Well, and also when the trailer for this first came out, like, the idea of an imaginary friend horror movie, but it's a bear. It was like, you're not supposed to see an imaginary friend. And so I think that's in all of our heads going into this movie that it doesn't really make sense.
Well, they even mention it in the movie several times. They're like, is it imaginary if it's real?
Yeah.
And they just kind of blow past it.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And then the reveal comes and it's like, oh yeah, we were right. That's not an imaginary friend if you could see the thing. So yeah, I just I wanted to throw that one in there, get away from horror for a second. But Jimmy, we'll go to you next. What do you got next?
To dig a little deeper into my love of Italian horror, definitely some House by the Cemetery, if you guys are familiar with that one. That's the one where, I mean, it's basically the basement. Like every time they went down the stairway, the way they lit it and shot it, it was very reminiscent of Lucio Fulci's House by the Cemetery. It makes me wonder if you've seen it.
He was doing, I haven't seen that one, he was doing like soft lighting for Dark Spaces type of thing?
Yeah, just like the way they shot up the stairway, as she was descending down the stairway. Mm-hmm. And then there was even a character that they kept showing like in shadow. There was a shadow character they weren't showing in the beginning of it. And that was a lot too of the actual monster in the basement in House by the Cemetery.
Oh, cool. Okay, I haven't seen that one either, but yeah, I mean, as far as a lot of like fun use of lighting and whatnot, especially when we get in that basement and then get into the
dream
world.
Both you horror guys just say you haven't seen House by the Cemetery?
I know.
I feel like it recently had a revival though. Like,
but if you lived like in a video store when you were a child, that cover. I mean, that is a. I don't even really love Italian horror, but that's a good movie.
I'll be the first to admit that I don't watch every horror movie. Sometimes I watch stuff over and over again. Yeah, I shamelessly will just do that because it's what I want to watch. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, a lot of Fulci stuff. He did feature some kids, and just the way that they were going after the kid scares in those films, it reminded me of like another thing Turek probably might have put in his head.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, Nick, let's go to you next.
Man, I got so many. Have you guys seen the movie Magic with Anthony Hopkins?
Oh yeah,
oh yeah.
Right with on. The ventrilo, like, the yeah. the moment where in Magic where he like he's like you realizes you have to speak for him and he has this like freak out. Like I immediately was thinking about that movie when she was speaking for him. And then when we saw that she wasn't actually talking, I was like, okay, this is very reflective of those scenes where they're cutting back and forth between the dummy and Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
So a lot of the cuts and the way that all that was shot and framed was really reminiscent of them.
Yeah. That's a really good one. And yeah, that was a great laugh. That moment where like is your kid like taking up a new hobby?
Yeah.
This movie's a bit of a mixed bag, but like that was a really great moment. That was funny.
Yeah.
That was
cool.
Yeah,
I thought it was just the absurdity of the lines and of what was going on.
I like, loved her turn, like she's crying good. And she's turning to her and she's not saying anything. You're like, oh shit! I loved that moment. Like,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. I thought that was fucking great.
Yeah, no, it was really good.
I think
moment.
Betty Buckley, she knew what she was doing with this film. She's like, okay, this is absurd, and I'm gonna help take you there.
yeah, she knew exactly what was happening in this thing. So, Tom, let's go to you next.
I would take it from Pennywise. Sure. Mm-hmm. You got the spider monster at the end, obviously, and the dead eyes with the light up eyeballs, and you can see all the worlds in there. And I honestly think, me and my buddies kind of mentioned this while we're watching it. Like, did they just ask AI to write a movie with all the most successful child scares? And they took, because like,
I wouldn't be
literally
surprised.
Like you have,
that's where we're at.
The I mean, we said Coraline, you got the whole Tim Burton universe in there. You got It, which is the kids movie. You got a little bit of Little Monsters, a little bit of Monsters, Inc. You've got, I mean, there's so much.
The Monsters, Inc.
There's
thing,
a
I definitely
million
got that, yeah.
Things that are like, I have an 11-year-old. I think this movie was made for the movies that she wants to write, you know?
And, they were really going after that, what would scare kids.
What kids think are cool, you know, like.
Was this PG-13, was it?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, they don't really show anything.
It could have been PG. Well, yeah, because, I mean, if anything, I'd really be surprised or curious on what a child would think of this film.
Well, speaking of that, I'm just going to jump right into another puzzle piece here. And I know it, obviously is the same producers, but Five Nights at Freddy's, mm-hmm. I think, is a part of that you can't not include that on this list here because
the same tone,
it's so, I mean, I don't know about you guys. I'm too old for it. So I don't know anything about like that whole phenomenon, but like it is freaking huge. And it's
my kids love it. And I took them to see it opening day and like I left and so many, I read all this stuff online from my peers that are like, this movie's trash. How is everybody like Five Nights at Freddy's? Because you're not 11, dude. Like, that movie is made for an 11-year-old.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I feel like this hits a tween level, you know? It's fun, but I would love to watch this with my kids, but I won't watch it again. But I liked it.
Yeah.
You know,
I messed up my boys because, I mean, even though they're 17, they wanted to see Five Nights at Freddy's, or they were looking forward to it, I should say. And they were disappointed, but that's because I've shown them every Friday the 13th and every Halloween. They're seeing how like not scary these things are.
They've seen all the.
But
Italian
they probably would have loved. Yeah, that too. but that's what I'm saying. If I would have shown my kids this film when they were like 6 or 7, which now we're showing them things, they probably would have loved it.
Yeah.
So I think this really should be marketed more towards younger kids.
Yeah.
You know, I don't see that so far in the advertisements and stuff. It seems like it's kind of still for like teenagers.
Yeah, I felt watching the trailer, I felt like it was marketed to adults.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, and it just, it's kind of strange. I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely feel like this is an under 15, 15 or under, you know.
I mean, if it is, I mean, we might be about to see a huge weekend with this thing, you know.
And
so.
I think spring break's about to hit for the schools.
Yeah.
Like this, I think this movie could do well with young people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think it's fun for them. Man, the Coraline stuff is like, that is just, they love that crap.
Yeah.
And the hallways and the weird rooms, like that's that Five Nights, the checkerboard floor, very Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Will there be a Chauncey the Bear at Hot Topic this summer?
I was going to ask if this is on. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. I bet you, and every spirit Halloween.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's another thing of Blumhouse. Like, okay, what can we do to market, you know, like what's going to be the hot toy, or what can we get out of this? Like,
Merchandising is totally part of it.
So.
Yeah. But it's been part of that since like the 80s, slashers and stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
How many hockey masks have been fucking sold?
Selling talking
know?
Molester dolls.
Well, it was definitely in the boardroom and discussion when he came out with this one.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, I think we could do one more round, don't you? There's a lot of stuff
there's
we could
so
talk
many.
About.
There's
Jimmy,
so
let's
many.
Go back
well,
to you.
Well, we talked about Alice in Wonderland again, but that was definitely a piece for me. Everything. It was just obvious with the character name, but... And like I said, I was happy that when it got to that twist and it got towards the nearing the end when we started to see all that come alive. And I just were raving about the set designs. That's something I said to Woody. I was like, I don't think this is CG. This looks pretty real. Like this is like real sets.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I know there had to be CG in there, but it looked really good.
And that's one thing like leading into this, like I always try not to read reviews ahead of time, but I did see like a few like headlines and stuff like that. And everybody pointed out that the one thing they could agree on about this is the practical effects make it worthwhile. Even if some critics like really thought it was crap, but like the practical effects though, definitely like, raise it above like the general like whatever horror movie.
And I rarely say that about films, you know, like to me it's really about story and everything, but like honestly that's probably what stood out above everything to
me. Yeah, for sure.
So they deserve their props is the props people. I mean the set design people.
There you go. Nick, what about you?
I just thought there were a lot of moments that were shot for shot. The changeling with the ball bouncing down the stairs, Blair Witch Project with the kids sitting in the standing in the corner.
Oh, yeah.
And there was one other that I thought was really interesting.
Ball was in The Conjuring also, right?
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, and the house burn. This isn't necessarily like a classical reference, but I'd just seen it. The remake of Black Christmas with the house burning and they're like, let it burn. Like
And the remake of Halloween. reboot. Whatever.
There's moments that are like, that was in this movie and that was in this.
That's another thing.
And I honestly don't like mind those types of callbacks. But this movie had a lot of them.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit. Like, this is the exact same. Like, what can we do here? I'll put him in the corner like in Blair Witch. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, okay, I guess, we can do that. But the second that I saw it, I was like, that's.
Yeah,
that's what that is, you know. So
that's another thing, like to bring in the whole Blumhouse of it all. All of these Blumhouse reboots lately, the Exorcist one that we did the live show on, the Halloween, they all have the protagonist who wrote a book about the phenomenon that happened in the original movie. So there was no original imaginary, but they had it anyway. Yeah. So you know,
I mean, there are archetypes that aren't just horror movie archetypes; they're like mythological archetypes that are thousands of years old. With the old person being the prophet or having prophetic writings and that type of stuff. That's something that's been going on for thousands of years.
Yeah.
So you can't just like put it on horror movies. But yes, it does crop up in horror movies a lot.
In Blumhouse specific.
Yeah.
That's like one of their, you know, they got the checklist of things we have to include.
Got
to be an old lady with a book.
Yeah.
Got to be.
Yeah. Well, and the actual physical checklist, which I thought was very Kill Bill. But in Kill Bill, it's a callback to an Italian Western called The Mercenary. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now we're doubling down on that. And specifically because of the boxes with the check marks, I was like, okay, putting boxes there, those are straight out of those two films. So. Wow.
Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot.
There's some Cthulhu in there, too. Like, just the whole, the spider. The monster. I was like, there's a little bit of Cthulhu in this.
Goes back to those cool practical effects. Mm-hmm. But Tom, one for you.
As a an effects artist and a monster creature creator, it's one that maybe other people wouldn't pick up, but the physical form of CB is his big burly self. I say Sweetums from the Muppets. Looks just like him.
Which one is Sweetums?
He's a big dude he's the only Muppet in a full body suit that's like, he's like a big hairy guy. It definitely looked like him. But I'd say also as a movie reference, and the art design, Beetlejuice with the whole drawing the door and, on the brick and stuff like that and how it just opens. Yeah. And then definitely they go right into the Beetlejuice's underworld. I mean, it looks.
That's another
like,
one of those shot for like shot. Like, it's exactly
pretty,
yeah.
pretty close when they do the first blue line around it and like the chalk line. Yeah. I was like, are they going to knock three times? And they didn't. But then when they're in those hallways, like you're like, it's Beetlejuice.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'll just throw in, I've got this panel of Las Vegas-based filmmakers here. I'll throw in Brandon Christensen's film, Z.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's a good one.
It's
yeah.
another film. I mean, yeah. that got a lot of buzz on Shudder a couple of years ago. And so, you know, it's probably in the ether a little bit. And, yeah, as far as, like, creepy kid movies go and the kid talking to himself and, you know, the parents seeing all that going on and not sure what to expect and then using camera tricks to... Yeah. Amp up the creepiness. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought The Shining then. I was like, okay, here we go.
Oh, The Shining. I saw Shining.
Did anyone else get Poltergeist because of the child of the medium? Yes. And then they go into another like sphere and then come back?
I was expecting them to do a lot more with when they brought in the psychiatrist lady or whatever. And like that, I thought Poltergeist.
She was going
to
clear the house.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be. I'm like, please don't. So it's funny how they do all these callbacks, but then I'm like, don't go there. And then they don't. I'm like, oh, good.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to.
What I was worried about with this film, I know we're not criticizing it, but what I was worried about with this film was like, are they going to do a Dead Silence where like they're marketing the doll, but then the doll never moves or like on its own or like, and they don't really utilize. I fucking hated it when they do that shit. Like do something with the thing. It doesn't have to be shot like the exact thing is like Child's Play, but let's see the freaking doll move. But we did. And I was like, okay, thank God.
Right. I got another one too. It was a good scare is the one in the hallway with the boy when the it was moving. And that was pretty cool. Like the way it was creeping up. And then another callback to Italian horror. They did it grew and got bigger like in Shock.
That was cool.
If you remember Shock, the scare in the hallway there.
That's cool.
Which they also did in Annabelle.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
Where she like ran and then went to a full size adult, whatever. I don't know. It's a great jump scare that
you're not expecting it either. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
But that was a pretty good scare in the hallway there.
It was. It was really well pulled off there. But let's open it to the floor and see if we got any puzzle pieces out here. And I do have prizes for anybody who throws one out. Well, for the first like four or five, I forget how many. They sent me these hats, little bear hats. So you're going to get one of those. But I see one right up there.
Did anybody mention the boy? 2016,
The boy.
I was thinking about that. I immediately thought of that when the mom was in the house, right? In case we didn't hear it, he's talking about the boy, Brahms, right? But when the mom was in the house, I was like, my first thought was, there's someone in the house that's making the bear do shit.
Right.
That was my first fucking thought. So I totally went there.
Absolutely. Also stuff in the walls, right? Wasn't that a big part of the boy?
Yeah, the boy is actually a guy that's like living in the walls
first
of the house. Yeah. Like in People Under the Stairs or whatever.
So there you go. That's a great one. Anybody else here got one? We got one right up here.
I would, Nightmare on Elm Street was mentioned earlier, but specifically part five. The whole end is that Escher labyrinth. The little girl looks like Jacob when he turns evil.
Okay.
And her catch line before she stabs is, you can't have her. Which is like exact like line.
Those are legit callbacks.
Yeah, those are straight up.
I haven't seen five in forever.
There's so many Nightmare on Elm Street pulls. The ones that we brought up, the ones that you just brought up. Which one is five? That's
Dream Child?
Dream Child.
Okay.
Freddy's trying to take a child into his world.
Yeah.
Right on. Yeah, there's clearly major Nightmare on Elm Street fans in the creators of this film. We got one right up there.
We were saying they kind of took from their own movie and then did Insidious in there.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that. I had that on my list as well. Insidious, I think, especially with the old lady, like, you know, and right. getting lost in that world, definitely.
They had to paint the door to get it to shut.
Yeah, that's right. I haven't seen that in a long time, but yeah.
And they're using their own material, I think.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Hey, they got a formula. That's we all know, show up every
Insidious Blumhouse? I feel like it was. It was Blumhouse,
yeah.
right? Yeah. Okay.
That's when you know they're nearing the end.
Yeah, they start reusing stuff out of the bargain bin of their own fucking
movies. We saw
movies.
That with the Exorcist movie, too.
It was
Two Girls in the Woods or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they do reuse their own things. It's pretty shameless,
dude. It's so fucking funny.
The other thing that I thought was...
I can't wait to send this episode to the studio, rep.
Did you guys know that you read? They're like, just be quiet.
I'll hold my tongue.
No, say what you
say. This is for 15-year-olds that haven't seen Insidious, right?
The thing is I make really cheap movies. And I watched this movie, and I know they had $3 million. More. I don't know how much they had, but more than $3 million. I could make that movie for $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Like, easy.
Could you really build the labyrinth sets? Come on. Some of that stuff was legit practical.
1,000% For $100,000, 1,000%. Come to Tom Devlin's Monster Museum.
I'm
going
to have to see that.
Yeah. No, those two right there, they'll build that whole fucking set. I'm not even exaggerating right now.
They'll build it, and it'll be a 5-foot by 5-foot model, and then you'll green screen everybody in.
And you know what?
No, we're practical, dude. That would be a 2,000 square foot. I have a warehouse we build sets in.
All right. All right.
And that's what I want to see. I'd rather see that than a fucking AI.
We should do the next live podcast in that space. That would be fun.
Bill Ben C. Escher.
Sure. We could do it.
Do we have to be sitting upside down on the stairs while I do the podcast?
That sounds like a lot of fun. Any other puzzle pieces from the crowd before we get into some closing thoughts here? Anybody else? Anybody? We got another one up there.
Evil Dead Rise from last year.
Okay.
With the little girl becoming like a little demonic.
Little baby demon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We love those. We love them.
Absolutely, yeah. The baby demons are in right now since, as we've been talking about, kids are who show up to these movies.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, and little creepy kids is, I don't know. It's a scary thing.
I think it's actually good that they're like making stuff that can be in the PG-13 territory and still be kind of creepy.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
like they're capitalizing
on
that.
Raises the next group of
genre fans. Also raises their income, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's where we're at right now. That's where we're at now. We're looking for the new generation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You got to, right? Mm-hmm. Well, let's get into some closing thoughts here. Jimmy, starting off with you, anything we didn't do puzzle pieces-wise, anything that you would just want to say about the movie?
Oh, boy. You said you're in with Blumhouse, and I'll just pass. I think we're witnessing the downfall. I hate to say it.
Mm.
But, you know, it's all good. It's move on to the next.
You know what? Real quick. Did you see Night Swim earlier this year?
No. And I heard that's
this is
one of the ones I heard was...
This is way better than Night Swim.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
I thought you were going to say Night Swim was great.
No.
Okay.
No, not
at
all.
I haven't seen it. Yeah. I just
not
have
good.
No desire to.
Yeah. This, I had fun with this. I was laughing, you know, like it's good. Not great, but like I had
but
a
I don't
good
think
time.
It was meant to laugh at. That's the problem.
Yeah, well, that's open to debate. Yeah, for
no,
sure.
No, overall, I enjoy it. Like I said, I mean, I love all horror movies, and I don't look at it just for me. I look at it as who to market this to. Who is this for? Who would enjoy this? And there's definitely the people out there who will like this. And so I know who to recommend to. You know, that's when I talk horror movies with people, I know what they would like. And this is, I definitely have a group of people that I would talk to about this and steer them to this direction.
Yeah.
So I think it was fun for that.
Right on. How about you, Nick?
I think maybe I was already kind of expecting it to be bad because you had posted something about like, oh, it's getting bad reviews. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Maybe that softened the blow for me.
Mm.
You know, but I actually really enjoyed it. I honestly, the first time that anything, aside from all the callbacks and all that type of stuff, which I saw, but I didn't really mind. The moment that it actually like took me out of the film was like, oh, come on, was when she walks past the picture and they all got the creep. I was like, that's...
Oh, yeah, that's...
I was like, guys,
everyone laughed
come
at you
on, like,
there.
You know, and I think...
knew what was coming.
And then when I saw, every time I saw the button eyes after that, I was like, this is fucking stupid with the button eyes. Like, can we not, you know, that was the only part of it that I didn't like. I feel like those little things... I don't know if you guys are both filmmakers, so maybe you can confirm this or not. It felt like the third act was rushed in production. Felt like everything else in the film felt pretty tight as far as like the stuff that was happening in the house. And maybe that's just because it's a single location and so they can't really fuck it up.
Mm.
Right. But it felt like the third act, once they started like copy and pasting a lot of these types of things to kind of make it spooky,
yeah.
It was like, okay, did we think about this? And I think that's where it started to lose me. But everything else, I was like, I'm kind of enjoying this. Like, I don't know. I don't care that it's PG-13 or whatever. I was having a good time. So
I feel like PG-13 or not, it was, to me, I don't think that every movie needs to be a mind-bending, like, twist of intelligence. I really had a lot of fun watching the movie. Mm-hmm. It felt, you know, there's Cabin in the Woods has that feel mm-hmm. of, like, this is just a fun,
right. every a genre. It's a mixed bag.
And
yeah.
The throwbacks, like, every, you know, you said you don't mind the throwback. I thoroughly enjoyed every throwback. Mm-hmm. Elm Street Sign, I'm in. You know, mm-hmm. Shining, you know, feel, I mean, every bit of that, I was like, there, it's a movie for fans by fans.
It was made by a fan. Yeah.
And I love that. I do that in my own stuff, maybe to a fault, but
I legitimately rip like shots out of other movies and use them in mine too. I don't have a problem doing that.
I recently did a film where I plagiarized American History X and for fun though, like I hope somebody notices because it's in a very different context with creatures rather than white power supremacists. But
we like to call them puzzle pieces here, by the way. Yeah.
But at the same time, I enjoyed this movie. I feel like in modern horror, rewatchability doesn't exist like it did when we were kids. Mm. Like, I watched Monster Squad 7,000 times. Mm-hmm. I'll watch this once. Yeah. You know?
I was going to actually ask that. Do you guys think that this one's going to have any staying power? That it's gonna like that
with young people. I think with young people.
You think so?
Yeah, my kids will love this movie.
Yeah,
and they'll be allowed to watch it. You know,
Monster Squad's a good example because, like, you know, I watch it now and I'm like, God, why did I like this so much? As like when I was younger, but you know, it doesn't matter. It's nostalgic, so that's why I'm saying
you like young kids see this today. Film ever.
The young kids see this today. It might be their nostalgic movie that they want to watch,
I think so. Little kids, like young up and coming wannabe horror fans that aren't quite ready to be there, you know. Like, I know some young kids that are scared of the other mother from Coraline, like, all those little girls at the sleepover party that were scared of the other mother this year will be scared of this, you know. They've grown
I disagree. I think Coraline's the iconic film. I don't think this one's gonna, even though I really enjoyed it. I don't think it's going to have the staying power. I don't think that in 10 years people are going to be like, let's watch Imaginary in the same way that they feel about other films that, I mean, even like Blumhouse is concerned, like movies like Paranormal Activity has staying power. That's one that you'll watch again because it is iconic in its own way. I honestly, even though I liked this movie a lot, I think in 10 years people will be like, what was that movie with that bear? I feel like that's going to be the reaction to it. And maybe they'll pick it up again, but I don't think it has the iconic staying.
I don't think it was good enough to do another one, so hopefully they don't do a sequel.
Well, that remains to be seen. But no, I
don't want 50 more callbacks to films that you love.
I think to wrap this up, like, to me, the main thing about this movie, and this doesn't always happen with these podcasts, with talking about what movies might have inspired, but I mean, look at how many we were able to talk about in this. I think
this is the movie for this podcast.
I know. Seriously, I hope this is, like, you know, something that teaches kids what some really cool horror movies to go back to is, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's just a shame they don't have a physical disc to put in and listen to a commentary where the filmmakers can tell them what they were doing here, you know, and that's a bummer.
That is a bummer, and that is something that we should talk about on a lot of podcasts, honestly. But let's wrap it up there. Jimmy, tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, well, right now, we're taking a little hiatus over at Nightmare Cafe, but I am the resident DJ there. I've been DJing there for over a year now. Every Thursday, we do horror trivia and bingo. Taking a little break this month. We're getting back into it in April, so you can catch me there most Thursdays. And then starting up again soon. And I'm also on, you find me on Instagram mainly at Spacetoons. That's SPACETOONZ. Also, my my channel on YouTube is where I do all my video mixes. In a nutshell, basically, I'm a video DJ. I take a mashup of a soundtrack and a film, and that's what I spin and play over at Nightmare. But also, all those videos are on my YouTube channel, which is at Spacetoons. It's actually called Spacetoon Cinemix on YouTube, so you could find me there.
You should get those glowing eyes that the thing was wearing at the end of the movie here while you're DJing. That would be pretty cool.
I like those eyes.
Yeah. Those are pretty sweet, right? How about you, Nick?
My name's Nick Woods, spelled K-N-I-K, filmmaker here in Las Vegas, and you can find me on Instagram, Ghost Chaser Productions, Ghost Chaser Nick, or you can follow Sin City Horror Club. Sin City Horror Club does. We're just a group that's trying to build community in the horror scene here in Las Vegas, get everybody connected. There's a lot of really cool people that like the same shit, and somehow they don't know each other. So we're trying to bring all those people together. We do a screening monthly at Millennium Fandom Bar called Vintage Horror Screenings, VHS, where we show old horror films on VHS. So, yeah. And this is coming out here soon, right? This podcast, yeah. So we will be showing Hellbound, Hellraiser 2 on the 20th of March.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Tom, how about you?
So, Tom Devlin, I own the Monster Museum out in Boulder City, which is right outside of Las Vegas. So if you're visiting Las Vegas or you live here and you've never been, come out to the Monster Museum, check it out. It's changing all the time. We try to update and change it and keep it interesting so locals come back. And then also one of my films, Teddy Told Me To, is streaming right now on Tubi. You can watch it for free. And it's amazing how much watching that movie on Tubi does for the filmmaker. So, you know, if you're going to sleep at night, just throw on Teddy Told Me To and go to bed. Because those commercials are worth it.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll bring it. Since you brought Tubi, I forgot my film, The Red Man, is finally up on Tubi. So you can check it out. Oh, check it out over there.
Very cool.
The Red Man.
Absolutely. Very cool. Well, I just wanted to thank Downtown Cinemas again for having us here. We'll be back here soon. We haven't announced the dates for back here, but we will be over at Maya Cinemas on March 28th for Godzilla X Kong, and then on April 18th for Abigail. But keep an eye out on piecingpod.com. We'll have all of the upcoming live shows we'll be doing. So thank you, everybody at home listening, and thank you, everyone here in the theater, for coming out for this movie and podcast.
Hi, this is Wax Trax Records here on 2909 South Decatur. We buy all your old 45s, your old albums, any type of music memorabilia. Also, we sell music memorabilia, albums, CDs, and a lot. Come on down to Wax Trax, 2909 South Decatur, or give me a call at 702-362-4300. Thank you very much.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation about Imaginary. Thanks again to Nick Woods, Jimmy Gonzalez, and Tom Devlin for joining me. Thanks to Downtown Cinemas for having us, and thanks to everyone who was there at the theater. And thanks to you for listening. If you're enjoying Piecing It Together, of course, make sure you are subscribed wherever it is that you're listening right now. And you can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod, and join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. I'd also love to hear from you if you have some puzzle pieces for the movie we just talked about. Send them in. You could email me, hit me up on social media, you know, any of the above, and I'd love to hear what you got. And maybe we'll get you on an episode one of these days. That is always a possibility as well. So I do also want to let you know that we do have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where I post bonus and advanced content from Piecing It Together, from Awesome Movie Year, and from my music career. Lots of great stuff over there, so check it out if you want to support the show. It is patreon.com/bydavidrosen. Of course, I just want you to be out there and continue listening, continue getting involved, all that. Share the show, hit like on the posts, all that stuff. But if you want to support the show in that way, that is very much appreciated as well. So let's close this out with a piece of music. And I played this before on other creepy kid type movies, but it kind of got to. It's a perfect fit. I did music for a creepy doll movie years ago called Heidi. I believe it's on Tubi. We talked about Tubi during the conversation, so another shout out for Tubi. If it's not on Tubi, it's on Amazon, but it's definitely available. And this is a piece of music that's kind of the theme song for the film Heidi. It's called Playtime. It's also available as a single on all of the streaming services, Spotify, Apple Music. But I hope you enjoy it, and you can check out Heidi on, like I said, Tubi or Amazon, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon. Thank you.
Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.